the Bramble Jam Podcast.
Hi, I'm Brant, and I love Christmas movies that were created after 1992.
I'm Alonzo, and I'm committed to the bit, and this
is Deck the Hallmark Podcast. We're back. Another Monday, another edition of what we're calling the 25 Weeks of Christmas Movies, taking a journey through Christmas movie history with me.
Past and less past.
That's exactly right. Going back and forth. In case you missed last week, Alonzo, each week we're watching an actual Christmas movie, a theatrical release is what we'll call it. Sure. And one week it's going to be you assigning me a movie that I've never seen that came out before I was born, because chances are I didn't see it. And the following week, this week, I'm going to assign you a Christmas movie that happens to be one of my favorites and that I know you either, maybe you're not as much of a fan of, or you've never seen it. It's going to be a lot of fun. The whole goal of this was to make you watch Polar Express again. I'm not going to do it this week. I'm going to do when you least expect it. It might be an April situation. If you haven't seen Polar Express, unless you've seen it in April, Alonzo,
well, I'll tell you that much. That's what all the experts say.
Alonzo, what's it like? You're the Christmas movie guy. That has to feel good, right?
You know, I always tell people, if you want to be thought of as an expert in something, find an area that nobody else wanted to be the expert in. And so it's just sitting there waiting for you. So, you know, that's worked out pretty nicely for me, I have to say.
It's the third week of January now. How are you coping with the lack of Christmas now?
I think I've still got a few peppermints floating around that didn't quite get polished off during December. But yeah, beyond that, it's just that cold stretch, you know. But this has been a lovely, you know, kind of island in my week where I get to like see movies and talk about them with you. And so, you know, we're keeping hope alive.
Now, I don't actually know this about you, but you like Christmas music, but are you the type of person that listens to Christmas music all year, or do you have a...
I get in a mood sometimes where I kind of need a little, you know, and so I will. Thankfully, SiriusXM keeps Holiday Traditions Channel going all year round for lunatics like myself. So I'll plug into that for about an hour or two and just sort of get my groove. But I'm not like pulling out the records or anything. That's strictly a December event.
I don't know why SiriusXM doesn't do all of their Christmas channels all year. Like it's just computer programming. Like what are you trying to save here?
They need the real estate for more, you know, like Kenny G. I have no idea.
But Holiday Traditions, it's just on the app, right? Like they don't actually...
I'm never clear about what the distinctions are, like, because I always listen to it either on my phone or on my Apple TV. So I guess that's the app, but I don't own a physical receiver or anything. I don't have it in my car. So it's just because I plug my phone in, you know.
I just would love to get some understanding. Like, why, why get rid of the, like, if you have an app, just put them on the app. Like, I would love Hallmark Channel Radio all year Christmas. Yeah. Why don't we do it?
Can't imagine. Are you like to dip into the well throughout the year?
Yeah, I do. But I do. I stop around the new year, and I usually make it a couple months.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Really, when it starts to get hot again is when I typically have to dive back in. Like once, you know, the first hot day of the year, I'm just kind of like, oh gosh, I need some Christmas music. So, yeah, look, you know,
there's more of us out there than I thought. I mean, like Hallmark started airing their stuff once a week, you know, all year round, the Christmas movies, but you know, we have July, you know, there's who knows how many podcasts now about Christmas that are, you know, throughout the year creating new episodes. So it's not just us, Brand. There's folks out there who are thinking about Christmas, you know, at any season of the year. And so we're here to scratch that itch for you guys.
Absolutely. I will say you have to think that at some point Hallmark We've talked about this. Hallmark drama serves no purpose.
I'm gonna
keep saying it until it finally. I'm gonna speak it into existence. I'm not gonna listen. What purpose does Hallmark drama serve? It cannot possibly get better ratings than a Hallmark Christmas channel all year would get, right?
I mean, I'm thinking the upside of them cranking out 40 whatever movies a year is that they're building an inventory, you know. They're not doing a lot of acquiring. They're right. Making these movies in-house.
They like didn't acquire, not a single 2021 movie from them was acquired.
So if Crown owns this stuff.
For at least a couple of years, from what I understand.
Yeah. Then like work it. Like, and I believe me, this comes up in a lot of different venues. They've got to know that there's an audience that would just, I'd be there for that. And I know you would.
But it's like they're afraid, like, are they worried that people won't watch from the hot? Like, you already do it four months out of the year, counting July. Like, just do it. Like, there's clearly, people want it.
I don't think they're ever, it's not like we haven't gotten anywhere close to the bottom of that well in terms of people's desire to see this stuff. So I don't know if they think that we'll get fried on it throughout the year and then it won't be special anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, don't get me started. Are you ready to dive into today's movie?
Yes, sir. Please tell me, what are we doing?
We are watching, and I get a lot of heat for loving this movie from friends. And I watch it every year. It's a part of my yearly collection, which I think most of these will be that I assign to you, unfortunately, for you and I guess for me, I don't know. We are going to kick things off with the 1996 classic Jingle All the Way.
Oh, God.
What?
All right.
How many times you've seen it? Probably just one time.
I've seen it once. I watched it while I was researching the book, and I was like, "No, I'm not writing about this."
Did it not even make your book?
It's in the appendix, you know. Like I listed a bunch of, you know, like these are also Christmas movies, but I didn't like write about it. But it definitely falls in that category of like if you were 8 when it came out, you know, like this is.
I was a solid 4. I was a 4 year old, so this was on when I was a kid. Every year, my brothers loved it. I have older brothers, and so it was on every year. I love this movie. I'm very excited that you're going to have to watch it.
I will try to watch it through your 4-year-old eyes and see if it, you know.
Thank you.
See if it grabs you this time, but okay.
Now, listen, I will have plenty to poke. Like, it's still Jake Lloyd. Like, there's still.
Oh, poor Jake Lloyd. He's like, the internet did him wrong.
The internet did him very wrong. But also, so did the people that hired him. I think we could all agree. Like, but we don't need to get into it right now.
Wait, that's another.
That's another thing. But for people maybe that haven't seen it, it's a very simple movie, and I think that there will be a link for the Just Watch, which will give you all the links to be able to watch the movie. But it stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's just a dad who isn't very good at being a dad, and has to find the one gift that his son wants for Christmas, which is a Turbo Man doll, and he cannot find a Turbo Man doll anywhere. And it is a simple Christmas Eve journey of trying to find that toy.
And putting the cookie down.
Put the cookie down. We'll get to it. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to let Lonzo go watch the movie. You're welcome. We'll be right back and we'll talk about the movie here on Deck the Hallmark. We're back. We're talking about Jingle All the Way. We started off so strong last week.
From one of the gems of the American cinema to this.
Jingle All the Way. You're welcome, Alonzo. During the break, you watched it.
I did.
For what I believe is the second time ever.
Yes.
Congratulations. Did you watch it back in 96?
I did not.
Okay.
I watched it when I was researching Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Right.
It was certainly a thing to consider and to look at. And I saw it and I was like, nope, I'm not writing about this. I am not devoting time to this movie.
And yet here we are years later, you met the person who loves it and watches it every year.
Clearly, it ain't just you. I mean, like, it has become a staple. It pops up. People reference it, you know. And I can see, you know, we'll get into it. I can see what the appeal is for someone who is under the age of 10. Seeing this movie. So are we plot synopsising or not? Are we just assuming that people know the story of Jingle?
Yeah. At this point, if you haven't seen it, just go see it. But I did a little right before the break, but or not go watch it, whatever. But yes, for me, you know, I was four when it came out, so obviously didn't see it when I was four. But
on cable or
but early, I mean, we had the VHS. I remember the VHS, and it was just one of those things that we watched as a family. And I, as a kid, you can see why as a kid this movie is.
Look, this movie is very loud. People get bonked on the head and they go flying through the air. Yep. I understand why, like, a small child would find this appealing. But
yes. Yeah. So as a small child, man. I love it. And I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know what it is about.
When you watch it now, are you watching it through the eyes of young Bran?
As I watch it now, it makes me happy. It makes me laugh. It makes me feel like a kid again. But I don't know why I can't. It's the same thing why, like, when I listen to, like, the Newsboys, I'm like, man, the news, they weren't bad. They weren't, like, it's because I listen to, there's something about the trick your mind plays on. If you like something when you were a kid, no matter how many times you, like, can try to take a step back and be like, this is not a good movie. At the end of the day, I have a blast watching this year after year.
Well, you know, and that's what matters. As I always ask on Twitter, is it great or were you eight?
Yeah.
You know, I get it. I mean, I feel like the stuff that I carry from my childhood is really good, you know. Like, I think Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory holds up, you know.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And it is genuinely awesome. But, like, I grew up in an era where there wasn't cable yet, not really much. There weren't VCRs yet, not really, unless you had, like, some reel-to-reel, you know. So I don't know. I feel like there wasn't as much entertainment aimed at my generation. I mean, that's part of the whole Gen X thing, is we sort of get lost between the boomers and the you know, millennials or whatever. You know, we didn't have Nickelodeon. We didn't have, you know, the Disney Channel. We grew up watching a lot of, like, 1960s sitcom reruns because that's what there was. So I don't know. There's a lot of stuff from me being that age that I feel all that precious about. Like, yeah, I get that I enjoyed Scooby-Doo at the time, but, like, I'm not dying to rewatch it now necessarily, you know. Movies like this, I get why, like, for a kid, they have appeal. But let's unpack this movie a little.
Yeah, I want you to unpack it for me, because I'm blind at this point. I watch this movie, I love it, it can do no wrong. And so I would love for you to pull back the curtain as a film critic, as a Christmas movie lover, a Christmas fan. Make the argument of why I should not like this movie, because I can't find a single reason, Lonzo.
I'm not here to tell you not to like the things you like. I'm just here to tell you why you're wrong for.
Okay, that's fair. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Okay, first of all, this movie falls into a category that makes me insane, which is the dad didn't go to my little league game.
Yeah.
I think Hook is maybe the granddaddy of this genre, but we see it all the time. You know, Eddie Murphy's Imagine That, and, you know, like, this is a recurring thing, and very often these are made by, I think, studio executives and producers who themselves never go to a soccer game and feel guilty about it, and so they make this movie where an adult is punished for not being present enough for their child. And it's like, here's the thing. We're dealing with late stage capitalism here in the turn of the 21st century. Everybody is being overworked and, like, stressed out. And the idea that on top of having to, like, you know, maintain that mortgage in the suburbs and do all the things that dads are expected to do, that they also have to eat crap for not being at every single dance recital, cut them a break. You know, I'm not even a parent. And on behalf of parents, these movies make me furious. So that's one thing.
I do want to acknowledge the one thing that I did notice this year. For the first time, I noticed something new every year, is how ridiculous it is that Arnold, who, from all that I can gather, essentially runs the company, the mattress company, which they're having a Christmas party in the mattress store. The it seems like, yeah. There's this mattresses lying around, which seems like an HR nightmare, by the way. We could all agree on that.
Slippery slope.
But why is Arnold up there doing sales? What's he up there doing sales for?
Who on December 23rd is like buying 400 mattresses?
Somebody is.
That's baffling. I mean, I'll skip right over the pet fact that by 1996, that we were all just pretending that the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger and his Austrian accent, we're just going to blend in to, you know, Minneapolis mattress sales and no one was going to comment on it. My parents were both immigrants to this country. They spoke very accented English. You know what they had to do all the time? Explain where they were from.
Yeah.
And that never happens to Arnold in these movies. It's like, oh yeah, sure. You know, my Teutonic neighbor, whatever. It's, you know, we're going to skate right by that.
Well, you dare not question him when you see him. You're just like, this guy.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, okay. So if you've got this guy who's already like built like an oak tree, to have him become Turbo Man at the end of the movie isn't that much of a stretch because we already think of him as being like one step removed from being a superhero anyway. He's the Terminator. He's Conan the Barbarian, you know? And so like when at the end, when the wife sees him in the costume, she's like, oh, Howard. I'm like, I'm sorry. Have you not been married to this gigantic thing your entire, you know, like for the last however many years? Like now do you it's got to be cosplay for you to suddenly find him like, you know, hot in that way? Like if you had cast your beloved Jim Carrey or like somebody a little more nebbishy in the role who then had to assume the Turbo Man thing at the end, I think that would have been a little more of a character arc. But for Schwarzenegger, it's you buy him as Turbo Man. You don't buy him as the mattress salesman. So, you know, that's weird casting. All right. Sinbad. And it's not so much Sinbad as the way this character is written. First of all, the entire joke of this character is that, it's a postal worker. They might shoot people. That's hilarious for a kid's movie. And then they like double down on it by him like threatening to have bombs. And like there's a Rodney King reference. I'm like, what are we even doing here, movie?
Him actually having a bomb.
Yes, all of that bonkers. And then, you know, on top of the fact that this movie is like laden with sexual innuendo in the first 10 minutes when Phil Hartman tells the horny neighbor lady that he's got the tool to help her out. I'm like, what? You know, who is this movie for?
But how great is Phil Hartman, though, huh?
Well, Phil Hartman, RIP, a legend, and is doing his best to turn this character into anything.
I think the thing that I love most about his character is that what's the appeal? Because he's just kind of like, he's Phil Hartman. Like, he's not Arnold Schwarzenegger. I understand if your neighbor is single and he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you're going to throw all the game you have. It's Phil Hartman, guys.
Yeah, it's one thing if this were set in an old folks home and he were like the right. Hot new widow where there's like eight women for every man, like, yes, of course, then suddenly he's a catch. But beyond that, it's like the idea that he's basically like, you know, he's like the smarmy version of the Lyle, the effeminate heterosexual character used to do on Saturday Night Live because he's like really good around the house. I don't know. That's all of a bit of a stretch as well. And then, like, the movie's big messaging here is clearly about, like, oh, you know, things aren't important. It's family relationships that matter and da-da-da, which, I'm sorry, that's a flex for a movie that has been an extended toy commercial this entire time. That's a real rapid turnaround at the end. And it only happens because the kid's dad has manifested himself as the toy object. So, sure, he gives away the toy at the end. Oh, what a big growth for him. Yeah, because his dad has the friggin' costume now. So, like, who needs the action figure when you're living with Turbo Man? That kind of, I think, takes away from what might have had some impact. Plus, it allows Sinbad's character this redemption at the end that he has in no way deserved. We just watched him threaten the life of a child for the last 20 minutes, and then suddenly...
And if it wasn't for the futuristic jetpack that exists.
Yes.
His kid is dead. The kid dies, right? Without the jetpack, the kid's dead.
the whole jetpack thing is like, okay, this movie has decided that we're whatever version of Earth we were on, we're not even there anymore. Like we're off in some other thing entirely. So yeah, I just, you know, I don't find Schwarzenegger particularly funny when he's trying so hard to be funny. Like he can toss off a line in like a movie like The Terminator or even like True Lies, I think, and have like, there's okay, you see there's some wit there. But when he's really like gritting his teeth and trying to be wacky, that for me is just the death of comedy.
So how did that that thing happened with Arnold in his career where he was Terminator and then suddenly he like was the kids movie guy with like Kindergarten Cop and that, like how did, like who told him that was a good idea? Cause I think Terminator, like do all that all day long.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that when stars reach a certain echelon, they want to go what they call four quadrant, which is like, you know, older male, younger male, older female, younger female. And so then, yeah. So if you're going to do this, like, you know, Commando and Predator and all that kind of stuff, you have to show your softer side and your like kid friendly PG rated side. And so, yeah. So you wind up in something like Kindergarten Cop or Junior, you know, and yeah, it's not everybody necessarily has the skills to slide back and forth in that kind of thing. If you ever have seen Stallone in, you know, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, you know what I'm talking about. So yeah, it's a weird choice. And I think that he's miscast because I think the whole I'm Turbo Man now thing would make more sense with any other actor who was not already an action star. But then you'd have to explain the whole jetpack nonsense and all the other stuff in this movie.
I want to know if there's anybody out here that's listening that watched this movie for the first time as an adult and connected with it. Like I know why I like the movie. I watched it as a kid. I found it to be absolutely hilarious and ridiculous. And all of the reasons why you pointed out that you think this movie is awful are the reasons why I love it. So, and that's just because I watched it for the first time as a kid and I connected to it as a kid. And so I want, like, is there somebody who watched this movie? Because it, like, for better or worse, it's played every year on Freeform and like, you know,
it's in the rotation. Yeah. It's become a staple. But I mean, like, here's the thing, this movie, I think, you know, I wonder if there's a draft of this screenplay that was actually intended to sort of satirize the consumer frenzy that is created every Christmas around the one, you know, unobtainable toy, you know, the Tickle Me Elmo, the Cabbage yeah. Patch Doll, whatever, you know, which is monstrous and ridiculous and I think underscores a lot of the worst about, you know, sort of, you know, consumer culture. But this movie doesn't ever really critique it as much as just use it as a basis for wackiness and people like running through store aisles and knocking displays over and punching, you know, cardboard cutout, you know, superheroes and stuff. And it's just like, it's like the difference between the Grinch cartoon and the awful Ron Howard.
Don't you say it. Don't you say Grinch. It. And you know, I'm going to make you watch it. Don't you say God. It.
Bran, we may not be friends anymore if you make me sit through that movie again. But, you know, like the original Grinch, the story and the half hour TV special, which are classics, are about, you know, like about anti-materialism and about how, you know, Christmas isn't reliant upon things. And in the Ron Howard Grinch, like all the Who's except for Cindy Lou are like horrible consuming like mad. And this movie never questions the idea of the sort of like the planned scarcity of the Turbo Man doll, of the fact that the kid has to have one because all of his friends are going to have one and he'd be a loser if he doesn't. Like he says that out loud and no one contradicts him. No one says, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't matter if you have that thing or not. Your worth is not, you know, tied into this object. No, the movie takes that as like, oh, you're right. He will be. You better get out there and get him one. And the entire film is about that. And nobody learns anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he
learns that that's awful, you know,
like Sinbad clearly has some serious, you know, problems mental because of this same problem that happened to him as a kid. Like he didn't get the thing, and so he felt like a loser. And instead of correcting it in his own child, here he is. Just kind of it's a cyclical thing.
Like if Schwarzenegger had given him the toy that he wanted back when he was a kid, like that would have been a nice coda to this. But that's forgotten entirely. Like that bit of exposition never comes up again.
Things I always think about at the end of this movie is, one, if I'm Arnold, I'm so mad. I mean, on the outside, good job, kid, giving away the toy. Like, that's great. Like, but do you know the hell I have gone through for this daggum toy?
Almost died for that piece of plastic.
You, like, and not to mention, Sinbad is going to jail, prison, probably for a very long time. He handed a police officer a bomb that exploded. He is not going to give his kid that toy anytime soon.
Yeah, that action figure is going to go in the envelope with his like keys and his watch that he's going to get when he finally gets paroled.
Yeah, yeah. But
one watch, one belt, what is this thing? By that point, it'll probably have like eBay resale value as vintage.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's good. Let's get to the Christmas cheer segment, all the feels, if you will. Putting this kind of on a sliding scale of Christmas cheer. Last week there for me wasn't enough Christmas, so I wouldn't watch it during Christmas time. It's a good transitional film. Alonzo, putting aside, I mean, I don't even know if you can, but putting aside all of the anger that you get while you're watching this movie, where do you kind of put it on the Christmas scale for a Christmas movie, for you?
Arnold Schwarzenegger punches a reindeer in this movie. Just going to put that out there. You have that parade. You have Phil Hartman's house, which is where Christmas went to die, apparently. It's crazily decorated. To me, this movie's messaging is so toxic that I think it's an anti-Christmas movie. It never stops to address what it's actually about and why the things that the characters want and want to achieve are like antithetical to the idea of what the spirit of the season is. But yes, there's some lights on the house.
Clearly I watch this every year. So it makes me feel good. You know, the parade, the lights that you said, obviously we don't go Christmas shopping anymore. I haven't gone Christmas shopping in years, but it's funny to look back and see like just how awful it was like to go shopping on Christmas Eve back in 1996. So, you know, I don't know. It works for me and I'm sorry, everybody. I give it like a 7 or 8 on the Christmas scale for me.
I can't even blame people who wave the flag for a thing that they loved as a kid. As long as they acknowledge that it's like you said, I saw this when I was a child. It still gives me those feelings of being a child. I think it's only when you try to apply like adult standards to rationalize why you still enjoy something. It's like, no, just own it. Own it that it was a thing that you watched as a kid and you watch it now. I mean, okay, case in point, there is an animated Rankin Bass special called 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Yeah.
It's the one about the mice and the clock.
I know it.
It got like booted to free, like it hasn't been, you know, used to air on network TV. Then it got booted to like Freeform. And I think maybe it gets like one re-airing during Christmas. Yeah. I watch it every year. I cannot defend it as a great piece of television, but I love the songs. I love everything about it. And it takes me back to when it premiered on television when I was 7 years old, you know? And so I think that there's nothing wrong with revisiting the stuff that gave you joy and having nostalgia for that stuff. It's just trying to say like, oh no, it's great art.
I was getting ready to ask you if you think there's ever going to be another like Rankin Bass Christmas Factory, but then I realized that we cover Hallmark movies for a living, so I guess that's that. I don't know if I'm gonna when we get to the Grinch, which we're not going to, it's going to be a while. I'm going to give you a break. I'm going to give you a break, but we will get there.
Okay.
I think I'm gonna make you a little angry in that episode because I'm not going to just defend it as a kid.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that one, I may like have a vein get visible under.
Just watch it. Watch it in like a time and a half.
So much. Oh, there will be breaks, believe me.
Let's do Christmas pairing. Trying to pair this with some other sort of movie. I should have given this some thought beforehand.
I have
okay,
one.
Okay, go ahead.
There is a documentary on HBO Max right now called Beanie Mania, and it's about the whole bubble of insanity that happened when people decided that they had to have every single Beanie Baby and that they would pay ridiculous prices.
Panda just told me about this and told me I should watch it.
Because they were only going to climb in value, you guys. and all that lunacy. That, to me, is a much more honest portrayal of, like, sort of American consumerist madness and how we tie up our identities with objects and possessions and how over relying upon that kind of thing will inevitably blow up in your face.
I love that every, like, 5 years Beanie Babies like get back into the headlines like, it might be time to dust out those bad boys, put them on eBay.
I think someone is now selling an NFT where like the seller will keep the Beanie Baby, but you'll have a certificate that says
that's the NFTs are our Beanie Babies.
Oh, totally.
Oh, my gosh.
Are the new Beanie Babies, which are the new tulips, you know,
for the life of me, can't figure out an NFT.
Oh, people keep trying to explain it to me, and I'm like, please.
So it's a digital, but one of a kind. Though that's not possible. Yeah, it's not possible.
It's not how any of this works.
Just because you say it doesn't mean that it is. I mean, you said HBO Max, so it made me think of 8-Bit Christmas, which I think is more of a, you know, tip Christmas of the hat story. To Christmas story, but it is, you know, being obsessed with the toy, doing anything for the toy. You do get a pretty fun mall scene. So that's what now is coming to mind. And I really enjoyed that movie as somebody who Christmas Story is probably my favorite Christmas movie of all time is how I end Christmas Day as I watch it. I don't watch it Christmas Eve, watch it Christmas Day, because I just think it's a 10 of 10 on the Christmas cheer scale.
Sure.
But so it's definitely more of a tip of the hat to that, but I can kind of make a connection. Go ahead.
Sure, you know, sorry. And that's a good example of a movie that acknowledges like what it's about and what the shortcomings of this insane pursuit, you know, might be.
It definitely lands the plane much better at the end as far as a lesson goes.
For sure. I'm curious, have you started watching Jingle All the Way with your own kids yet?
Not yet. My oldest is 4, and so I haven't though. I showed him the new cartoon Grinch and I had the old cartoon Grinch.
Oh, which
so
I
he
love,
knows,
yeah.
He knows about Grinch. And you know, he loves the Polar Express, but that's kind of the level he's at. Jingle All the Way, you know, I don't think he would be able to appreciate the beauty that is Jingle All the Way yet.
I would recommend that maybe you think about what conversation will you have afterwards
100%.
About, you know, materialism and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I know I sound like a wet blanket. I know I'm trying to make this too heavy, but that's what this movie is about.
Totally.
Like this isn't the subtext, it's the text. So, you know, I think it's these are valid questions to ask.
Alonzo, I'm with you. I love this movie though. I don't know what you want from me.
There is no arguing with your 8-year-old self.
Please,
I get it.
By all means, give away as many of your possessions as possible. I love that. But at the same time, sometimes you gotta fight somebody for a Turbo Man doll, and there's nothing you could do about it, man. There's nothing you can do about it.
Also, if the wife asked him to do it like 2 weeks earlier and he has an assistant, you are a terrible parent.
Terrible parent.
You are a terrible parent. If you have a secretary who will stand there and tell you that you're going to be late to your kid's karate thing, you could pay her during lunch to go get you the dumb doll 2 weeks ago, and none of this would have happened.
Dumb doll. All right, I'm going to take my headphones off. Alonzo, you're going to tell everybody what we're going to be watching next week. Give them time to prepare, and and then we'll wrap it up. I'm taking my headphones off. You give me the signal after.
Okay. We're going back to 1940 again for Remember the Night, a romantic comedy starring the immortal Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray, and with a screenplay by one of the greatest American film writers of all time, Preston Sturges.
I had to unplug my headphones because I could still kind of hear you. I don't want any hints. But for anybody watching,
I covered my mouth so you couldn't read my lips because I know how you do.
You think that's what I do? I feel like you should know me better by now. All right, everybody, we're gonna be back next week. Enjoy your week. We're gonna be back tomorrow with ice wine, I believe, is what we're doing. Some sort of ice wine.
Perfect pair
is what we're doing. Until then, may we be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Deck the Hallmarks of Bramble Jam podcast. It's presented by Philo TV. It's produced by Brandon Gray and recorded live in, Greenville, South Carolina. Set decor is by Plum at Haywood Mall. For more information on Deck the Hallmark, you can go to deckthehallmark.com. For more information on Bramble Jam Podcast Network, you can go to bramblejampodcast.com.